We're doing Mishlei. We're up to what's called the second chapter, the 10th Pasuk. And Shlomo Melech had been talking Shlomo Melech had been teaching us about how a person can succeed in learning Torah. And Shlomo Melech continues, and he's describing the process of one's growth in Torah and the tools and the keys to growth in Torah. And Shlomo Melech says in Pasuk Yud, Ki tavo chokhma v'libecha, when wisdom enters your heart, v'da'at l'nafshecha yinam, and your soul takes a liking to wisdom, a desire for wisdom. Notice that it is a procedure. First you have to accept a little bit, and once you have a taste of it, then you want more. At first glance, things seem strange. You look at Judaism from afar and you say, what's wrong with those people? Why can't they just be like everyone else? From a distance, it just doesn't make sense. But you have to be open and learn a little bit, and then you evolve into the point where it is lenafshecha yin'am, where it is pleasant to you, where it is something you even want. At first glance, it isn't that way, but you have to first, it has to enter, seeps in, and then slowly you start seeing, wait a second, this makes sense. Hey, vidat and knowledge, lenafshecha yin'am, is something you like. And this is true for many forms of knowledge. There are many types of knowledge that a person at first glance is distant from them, and then slowly, the more he learns, the more he takes a liking to it. Mezima tishmor alecha, the wisdom of the Torah, the capacity to plan that the Torah gives you, that will protect you. Many people who spent many years learning Torah and then had to go and figure out a different way of making a living suddenly found that the tools they learned in Torah, their analytical thought or the other tools they gained in learning Torah, helped them. There's a guy named Isamar Ginsberg. You guys might remember him. He used to come every so often to our Thursday nights. He came on Sukkot a few times, a Hasidish fellow. And he has a website. I think it's like isamar.com or something. And you could look at Inc. magazine. He was one of the top 10 entrepreneurs a few years ago. And now he has this whole consulting firm. And he's online. Those of you who are connected with me in email, you could see he's on my buzz. And he has all these different interesting posts, and he has all these different seminars, and he trains people how to succeed in business. Mezima, the Torah is sometimes referred to as the plot, the plan. The Torah is supposed to train us to be able to plan correctly in life. Tishmor alecha, and it protects you. Tivuna, tinzereka, the understanding you gain from the Torah should also protect you. But again, you don't get this the first day you walk into yeshiva. And you don't get this if you're spending half your time in the coffee room. If a guy is learning, and he's learning, and he's understanding, and he's getting the messages of the Torah, and he learns how to properly apply them in his life, so then the Torah is a very useful tool. And the Rambam has different places where the Rambam shows us how the Torah expected us to plan and work out our lives, the balance between Parnasa and Torah, and many other questions as to the order of how one should set up one's life practically. The Torah really gives us insight. We just have to know enough Torah to see that insight. In certain areas, our generation doesn't know enough Torah. And in other areas, you do. And we'll see that the book of Mishlei is a great example of a part of Torah that gives practical advice how to succeed in life. Lehatzilcha miderecha. The Torah protects you from a bad path. Meish medaber tapuchot, from a person who is a smooth talker, and what he says is really he twists his words. Now, the deep meaning of this is that the Torah saves us from mistakes in philosophy, where there are different religions and different philosophies and ways of life that try to lead us astray. And they will sometimes take the words of Torah and twist them in their attempt to lead us astray. And true Torah learning protects us from this. That's the deep meaning of this pasuk. But we have to remember that Shlomo HaMelech told us that the book of Mishlei has good advice on the simple level and also on the deeper level. So on the simple level, the Torah is supposed to save us from a swindler, from a guy who twists his words. Learning Torah is supposed to help us discern when we speak to people who's telling the truth and who isn't. When the two women came before Shlomo HaMelech, two prostitutes came and said, "We both had a child." The woman number one, we'll call her Mrs. A, walks in and says, "Me and this woman, we were together, we had a child, no one was here but us. And then last night, she rolled over on her baby, and she must have seen she killed her baby, so she put the dead baby by me," Mrs. A says, "and she took the live baby by her, and now she's holding my live baby, and I'm holding her dead baby, and King Solomon, Zohar 12, make her switch back, make her give me back my live baby." And Mrs. B says, "That's not true, this is my live baby, that's your dead baby." And Mrs. A says, "No, it is your dead baby, and mine is the live one." And Shlomo HaMelech says, "Mrs. A keeps saying, this is your dead baby and mine is the live one." And Mrs. B keeps saying, "Mine is the live one and yours is the dead one. What are we going to do?" Shlomo HaMelech knew off the bat that Mrs. A was the liar. Because if Mrs. A is walking in and she's holding the dead baby and she's painting the story that this is what happened, well, Mrs. A, if you're holding the dead baby, you have to bring proof that the live baby is yours. Technically, Shlomo could have said, halacha says, you're making the claim, you bring the proof. You're holding the dead baby, you claim the other one's yours, prove it. But he didn't say that. What did he say? Mrs. A keeps saying, the dead baby's yours and the live baby's mine. Shlomo HaMelech was saying, listen closely to what she's saying. She's first stressing, I didn't kill the baby, the dead baby is yours. That's the first thing she says. And only as an afterthought does she add, and the live baby is mine. And listen closely to what Mrs. B is saying. She's saying, no, the live baby is mine. That's her first concern. And then she says, and by default, you know, the dead baby is yours. So Shlomo HaMelech, just listening to these two women, already knows what the truth is. And he's all of 12. But he knows that the people standing around him aren't going to be convinced, and as a 12-year-old, he has to prove it to them. So he takes advantage of the fact that he's a 12-year-old, and he says, bring me a sword. You know, what can we do, guys? Two women, one baby, what do we do? Bring the sword, let's cut him in half. So everyone's sitting there in utter shock. This is a 12-year-old, that's our king? And the two women, well, they weren't the highest women in society, they're also standing there in utter shock. Shlomo HaMelech says, bring him the sword, quick! So one woman says, no, give her the live baby. And the other woman says, no, you're right, Your Honor, that makes sense. And then everyone saw his wisdom. But the Torah taught him to discern already from the first minute that the two women walked in talking. He already knew where the truth was. And he alluded to it. He said, listen, gentlemen, listen to what they're saying. But then he sees that the people haven't heard what he's heard. So he proves it to them. So Shlomo HaMelech here tells us, he says, the Torah will protect you from a bad path, from a person who twists his words. Medaber tapuchot. He speaks twisted words. Ha'ozevim olchot yohosher. They leave the path of straightness. Lalechet bedarchei choshech. To go down the paths of darkness, these people. Someone tells you, I'll tell you something, but don't tell anyone. You have to stop and think, do I really want to hear this? Hasimechim. You ever get that email? I get it a few times a month. You guys never get that email? This guy who just wants to transfer out of Africa $3 million if you give him your bank account? I get that, but just don't tell anyone, right? Hasimechim la'asot raha. Yagilu betapuchot ra. These people are happy to do that which is bad, which is evil, and they rejoice when they have their evil plots happening. So, what? Tapuchot is twisted words. Betapuchot ra, when they're twisted evil, when the twisted evil plots are taking place, that's when they're happy. So, a person who realizes that Hashem is running the world, So then if something bad happens, he's worried. So, you know, even if he's doing something wrong, his conscience keeps telling him, God's watching, and one day I'm going to pay for this. And even when he does something bad, he's not happy. Meaning, the second a person comes in contact with the concept that God is watching, and there is a payday, so then he's never again going to enjoy sin like he once enjoyed it. He might enjoy it, no one's saying he won't enjoy it, but the level of enjoyment is not the same. Shlomo HaMelech says, these people, they really don't connect with this concept. They're happy when they do bad, because they don't feel like God is really watching what's going on here. There was a story of a Jew named Rav Chaim Fischel. His yahrzeit is now, in the month of Sivan. No, Chaim Fischel's yahrzeit, when? It's back, sorry. It's early in the year. His wife's yahrzeit is now. So he was a mohel, and he was a learned Jew back in Poland, in the city of Sosnowitz. And he was a big businessman. He owned a large part of this town in Poland. He owned like a whole block, which was a big part of the town. So he was once going on business, and the Polish person who was driving the wagon, he saw that they would go by a church, and the custom then was that you'd stop and put a cross on yourself and then keep traveling. And they didn't bother stopping, making a cross on themselves. So he looked at them and he said, okay, so they're living here in Poland and they're not religious people. Well, not religious people don't have a conscience. So he suddenly got scared. He's traveling to the market to do a lot of business, and he has a lot of money on himself. So what he did was he said to them, oh boy, I left all my wallet and all my money at home. I got to go back home to get my money. Guys, I'm going to pay you the fare, but we got to go back home. Let me just go pick up my wallet and then we'll go. They turned the wagon around. They drove back the 2 hours to go back home. And when he got back home, he said, look, it's too late. We're not going to make it. I'll pay you your fare. And we're not going. And he left a tradition to his children and grandchildren. And when you're with a person that's not religious at all, you have to worry for your life. You don't know. Don't go traveling the distance with them. Miss the market day, but save your life. So Chazal warned us. If a person has no religion, he has no conscience, then he can really enjoy doing evil. A person like that can really be evil. Yes?
I just wanted to mention, some people say that in the name of religion there's been a lot of wars, whatever. But the worst murder, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, the worst murder, mass murder have been in the second of the last century.
You hear?
Do we know that a religious person is really religious? And that kind of, that level of being religious.
I agree, but when you have an indication otherwise, then you have to think twice. No one's saying that, you know, that just because a person's religious, he won't kill. The Crusaders killed many people. You have a lot of religious people. The Muslims kill many people. No one's saying that a religious person is not going to kill.
I thought he was talking about Jews, and he was talking about Christians.
He was with Christians, and he said, here in Poland, every other Christian won't go by a church without putting a cross on themselves, like making the sign of a cross. And the fact that they aren't indicates to me that they're not religious. If they're not religious,
that they are, why the idol worshippers, how can we really trust them? You know, a person that believes in many gods, how can we know that they're really straight?
No one's saying you should trust them any better. We're just saying that someone who's not religious, sometimes you should trust even less. That's all.
Based on the individual, or you base it on like the club?
This is going off on a tangent. In general, Chazal said, it's a long conversation. Let's leave that for the question and answer session. So later tonight, Bezat Hashem will get back then. My only point was that sometimes when a person gives you an indication that he's not connected to any religion or to the given religion of the time where he is, so that seems to indicate he's not connected to religion, that could give room for more concern. I'm not saying that the religious are necessarily going to be better, but when you have this indication, so that's what Shlomo HaMelech is saying here, that when a person has no concept of God, when he's living without a God, so then he has no conscience, and he could be much happier to be evil than someone else can. In the name of religion, people can kill and be happy too. That's also true. No one's saying that you're safe there either. Pasuk Tetzvav. Asher ochoteihem ikshim, that their paths are twisted, and whatever they do, their logic is not straight. Unlozihim b'magelotam, and their paths are completely twisted. So you'll meet people in life that are like that. So the Torah is going to save you from people like that. You know the joke about a wife who asks her husband, they were going to take a flight together. She says, they tell us to fill out our weight. I don't know what to fill out. I told you guys this joke, right? Should I write that I weigh more? And then they won't notice if I carry heavier luggage. Should I write that I weigh less? And then maybe there's a penalty if you weigh too much on the plane. What's better to write on the form? So her husband says, why don't you write your true weight? So she says, I didn't even think of that. there are people like that in life. Their immediate thought is, how can I win the system? Well, who said you shouldn't work with the system? And one of the things Shlomo Melech is saying is that the Torah is supposed to help us stay away from this. Stay away from people who can cause us harm like this. La'atzilcha me'isha zarah, to save you from a strange woman. And throughout Mishlei, Shlomo Melech describes how the Torah keeps us away from a strange woman. And the deeper understanding is that he's talking about, again, the false religions, the incorrect philosophies in life. The simple reading is that he's talking about a strange woman. Only the problem is to say that Shlomo Melech is saying, I'll keep you away from adultery. The whole Torah, the whole purpose of the Torah is that you don't end up falling with an adulterous woman. That's a little bit tough to say that's the whole point of the Torah. That's why we say Shlomo Melech obviously meant something deeper, and that's an idea. A woman is where one takes on a relationship that encompasses all of his life. And here, Shlomo Melech was referring to religion, which is what encompasses all of one's life. That Shlomo Melech is saying that the Torah will protect you from entering a relationship, an all-encompassing relationship, which is foreign to you, which is a reference to a foreign religion. Well, it's an error in philosophy. Minochriya amarea echelika, from a foreign woman who talks smoothly. So Shlomo Melech says, the Torah is going to save you from all that. And again, here that's part of the issue. If you're...
It's a pretty major... The shot is pretty important to begin with.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, that's what Shlomo said in the first chapter, that everything he's saying should be taken literally and also on the deeper meaning. The literal meaning is also an important meaning. He said that in his introduction. You'll notice that Shlomo Melech describes that the way that someone seduces someone else is by talking smoothly. You'll often find, and I find this a lot here in the Middle East, that when someone tries to sell you something and you ask questions, they smooth talk you. That's not a problem. I remember Pesach time, we went to a store and they were selling these long, hard needles that you could open up the pipe that the gas comes out of the oven. Sometimes those pipes get stuffed. So as you're cleaning for Pesach, you see that pipe, you need to clean it out. It's the, you guys know what the, under the casket, I think it's called, what the gas comes out of? It's like this little hole, and they had these metal needles. So the seller says, we're having a special deal today. These are needles that will last you a lifetime, and we're giving you two for the price of one. So one of the women standing there said, if it lasts a lifetime, why do you need two?
You can lose one of them.
Right? And you'll find often here that if you listen to what people are telling you, just ask a few questions and they'll tell you it'll be okay. And you say, wait a second, but how's it going to be okay? You ever stand by a taxi and they tell you, come on in, we'll work out the price. I very often stood there and said, no, well, how much do you want? And they said, we'll make it work. No, you want, we'll put on the money, we'll put on the meter. You don't want, we'll set a price. So I could be a toughie, and I could enter it, And then when we're halfway there, I could tell him a price, and he'll tell me a different price, and I'll say a different price, and then we'll both end up, I'll end up feeling bad. I don't know if he'll end up feeling bad. So I'm a softie. I don't want to feel bad. So I don't have to enter his taxi. If he's willing to do it on my terms, and then I've had this where I've stood there and I said, no, you got to tell me a price. And the guy says, why are you so tough? So I say, why are you so tough? Well, I'm asking for a price. Why do you have to be so tough? I'm not being so tough. Just tell me what price you want. All I want is a fair price. So Shlomo Amar warns us, one of the things the Torah is supposed to train us to do is not to fool for smooth talking. If you're in the right, don't be pressured. Sometimes they're trying to pressure you to enter a deal. Sometimes they're trying to pressure you to do something. Wait a second, why? And there's nothing wrong with asking why. And if you really learn Torah, then the Torah is supposed to train you not to fall into it. Yeah.
So what happened when situations like this? I went to Chuk last Yom Shishi, and I bought some peaches. And I understood the guy, he took the peaches with his hands or two, put it on scale, but you know, the hand was like touching the peaches, which meant that he just gave me a price. So I didn't know what to do, I accepted peaches. Will it be forbidden to get into this smooth talk and buy stuff that you can see clearly that people broke Torah?
I don't know if it's forbidden because of that. Shlomo Melech is saying the Torah is supposed to train you not to fall for that.
But in a German term, it will be forbidden to buy like these peaches or buy something like...
If you want to forgo the money, he's not sinning. You're mochel the money. It's only his sin if you're assuming he's giving you a fair rate. If you know he's charging you a rate that he made up and he's just playing the game of touching the scale, you want to pay like that. You could pay like that. You're entitled. He's doing something that's wrong. But when you're actually paying, being that you're aware that this is a game, so then I don't know that you could call that a sin, you know, if you're aware of it. All the other buyers who are not aware of it, that's a problem. The fact that you're letting him get away with it and you're not telling him, hey, you didn't weigh that, maybe you're helping him cheat other people, maybe in that sense.
I had no reaction.
Huh?
I had no reaction this first time. I mean, like
I wouldn't buy in that store.
I wouldn't go to the shuk anymore to buy any stuff.
Why? There are excellent stores in the shuk.
But it happened to me a second time there. So I was giving him money and said, you need to give me more 30 agoras. I said, no, I gave you all the money. He was looking at me like, he thought I will not be speaking Hebrew. And they gave me the apples like, you know, like these. So they try to cheat people. I don't like that.
I'm in the shuk every week. I don't have this problem.
You need to tell me the stores which you buy.
Come with me. No problem. Yeah.
If you have somebody who's an opera and he's really, really used to, you know, everything's nice. And, I mean, you know, maybe one person will say something not nice, once, but for the most part, everything's nice and pretty. And then he goes out into the world. I don't know, you know, and somebody tries to cheat him. Would you say that he's, even though he's learning Torah all day, that maybe he is more likely to, you know, to not know how to deal with it and be pressured than somebody who's learning Torah less, but is involved in the world and knows how to, you know, deal with these situations more because he's just simply had more experience dealing with situations?
It could be, but it shouldn't be.
But would you say that it is?
It depends, you know.
It depends
on a lot of circumstances. No, you know, sometimes a person can take a period where he closes himself off in a bubble and he's learning in a yeshiva and he has no clue what's going on in the world. And sometimes you're right, and then he won't know how to deal with the world. In the long run, the Torah is a Torah of life. And the Torah is supposed to teach us how to deal with life. You don't find that David HaMelech didn't know how to deal with life. We just had a story earlier tonight about how he was able to outwit swindlers. You don't find that Rabbi Akiva's students were being taken for a ride. You find that they were able to take the thieves for a ride when they tried to swindle them. We've had many stories over the last half a year where the people who learned Torah were able to outwit those who tried to outwit them. There's the famous story about the rabbi in Prague. I don't remember if it was the Noda Behuda or the Maharal of Prague. But there were, I think it was the Noda Behuda, I think it was Rabbi Cheska Lendel. But there were two storekeepers that were neighbors. And one was very nice and friendly to everyone, and he sold oil. And the other one was a tough storekeeper, and his business wasn't going so good, and he sold perfumes. And the one that sold oils took his money and on Friday afternoon, he counted his gold and he put it in a little red bag and he hid it somewhere. And his neighbor, the storekeeper, across the wall from him, meaning there was only a wall splitting the two shops, he had banged the nail through the wall and he peeked in through the people and he saw where his neighbor hid the money. And he went and stole it. And then the next week when he comes in, the storekeeper sees all his money's gone and he realizes that it's the guy next door who stole it, and he took him to court. And when they went to court, the judges couldn't figure out what to do, and this went up to the high court and they couldn't figure out, you know, this guy's saying, my neighbor never made this kind of money, I'm missing the money, it's my money that he's holding. And they didn't know what to do. And the perfume shop owner said, no, it's all my money. So the judge was once walking, and everyone was talking about this case, and he saw a group of kids had gathered, and one kid stood in the middle and said, now let's rule on the case of the two storekeepers. So they made a mock case, and two people came before him, and one person said, this bag, and he holds up a bag of rocks, he says, this bag, this child says, this bag is mine, I sell perfume, I made this money honestly, it's all my money. And the other kid says, no, you stole it from me. I sell the oils, and that all that money in that bag is mine. And they both stand before this bigger kid, and he's the judge, and he stands before him, and he puts his hand on his face, and the kid's thinking, and he says, I'll tell you what we'll do. Guys, give me the bag of money. Bring me a bowl of boiling hot water. They bring a bowl of mock water. And he says, now we're going to pour these coins into the bowl of water. If it's from the perfume shop, then there should be no oil floating on it, because you deal in perfume all day. But if it's really from the oil shop, then all the money is going to have a little bits of oil from the oil shopkeeper, and then oil will float to the top. And the judge is standing there on the side listening to this kid who figured out, hey, how? He says, that's a great idea. So he goes, and when the case comes before him, that's exactly what he does. And obviously he finds out that it was stolen goods. And then he says, but it was a Jewish boy who taught me this idea. He was an honest judge. He said the truth, where he got the idea from. And I think it was the Not Biuder of Yecheskel Landau.
So
the judge was not Jewish, but he happened to be walking by when little kids were playing.
Did you ever know the CD with Rifflinger?
No.
The child
situation? No. And then, what do they say there? Who was it? The Not Biuder? Was it Rabbi Yecheskel Landau?
It was like a
tape
for little kids.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure it was Rabbi Yecheskel Landau on the stage. The kid grew up to be the Not Biuder, one of the famous rabbis in Jewish history. The Not Biuder. He wrote a response. He wrote a work on Shas called the Tzlach. His name was Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. So at any rate, Torah is supposed to train us to be able to deal in this world and succeed in our dealings in this world. No one's saying that you get it the first day you learn or the first week you learn, but yeah, it's supposed to get there. And I can tell you that the rabbis I had the good fortune to learn under were there. Like you could see people. There are rabbis here in Israel today also. I asked a friend of mine, an alumni from here, how his father-in-law is so successful in the stock market. So he said to me, oh, simple, he goes to Rabbi so-and-so and asks him for every move he makes. Okay, don't ask me how that rabbi knows the stock market, I don't know. And guys, don't ask me where to invest your stocks, because I have no clue. But okay. Yeah.
You know, I listen to this rabbi sometimes, you know, online, I download his speeches. And he says that Arizal has a calendar that he made that each day has a certain muzzle, said. And usually the stock market goes with this calendar, said.
Okay, I hear. You see? Right. So you know more than I do about this. I don't know.
What
did
you say?
Arizal has a calendar that he made for certain days that have a special muzzle. You know, so to speak, good luck. No such thing as luck, but
maybe he's
also
in the market, right? I don't know. Okay, so I'm not saying when it comes to the stock market, but I am saying that the Torah is supposed to teach us practically how to have successful dealings. I told you guys the story about the Ponzi scheme. I told you the story.
But we all know.
Didn't I tell the story? There was a guy who came to Rabbi Feinstein. This story goes back about 15, 20 years ago. Came to him and said, he wants to make a certain contract with another person, and that person is willing to give him a huge interest on his money. And halachically, is it okay with the laws of interest, A, B, C, and D? Fine. The rabbi looks at the contract. He says, yeah, but how could a guy give you such high interest? Look, you could do it, but I don't know. So the guy goes into the deal. A lot of people went into the deal with this guy. After 5 years, he comes back to the rabbi. He says, look, 5 years, he's been giving me my interest. But now I want to put more money with him. And again, this time we want to frame the contract this way. Is it okay? So the rabbi looks at it and he says, wait a second. Look at your last contract. You invested with him, let's say, $1 million. Over 5 years, he paid you back $1 million in interest. He never gave you back the principal. So you don't know that he gave you back interest. Maybe he's been giving you the same principal that you gave him. Before you invest more money, why don't you look into it? And the guy said, no, I'm not the only one. A bunch of people are investing with him, blah, blah, blah. End of story. A year later, the guy flew the country with everyone's money because that's exactly what he was doing. He took everyone's principal and gave it back. And after they saw they were getting their 15% after 3 years or 5 years, whenever the 15% were up, so then he came to them and said, look, you can make more money. I'm opening for more funds now. Everyone saw they were making this 15%. Great investment. They gave him the funds. And then he flew the country. So I've seen this. I've seen this in many cases where the Torah trained the person to have a sharp eye, and he was able to catch all kinds of things that happened behind the scenes. And the Mishnayos tell stories like that. To tell you every person makes it to that level, I know different people make it to different levels. You know, and different people have different strengths and weaknesses. But at the end of the day, this is one of the things that the Torah, one of the skills that the Torah is supposed to train us with.
Is that good to run to Rabbi all time to ask him, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What should I do? What? That's not the way to live.
Let's discuss that in the question and answer, because the answer is more than the 1 second answer. In general, yes, you're right, but I'd like to add more details. So Shlomo HaMelech says that the Torah is going to save you from this strange woman, and we said that could mean multiple things, from this foreign woman who speaks smoothly. How zevet aluf nehureha, this woman who she leaves the master of her youth, the lord of her youth, v'et brit Eloheha shachecha, and she conveniently forgets the covenant of her God. So, what's the most basic covenant that God gives a woman? That she should be faithful to her husband. The simpler reading here, again, is this is a reference to a woman who's cheating on her husband, and she's trying to convince you to join in the adultery, and she's making believe everything's going to be okay. The deeper meaning is, this is a reference, as we said earlier, to foreign philosophies and foreign religions. And Shlomo warns us. He says, in the beginning it's sweet, but ultimately, kishacha el mavet beitaha, her home is like a slide, that a person slides swiftly into death, and the Torah is supposed to protect us from that fall. Ve'el refa'im magiloteha, and her footsteps, so to speak, they lead to the place of the deceased. Refaim are the deceased. Or refaim could also be from the word nirpim, those people who have, so to speak, weakened their grasp on the good path. They've left that path. So this is an order. Ordinarily, in the beginning, everything's sweet, and they sweet-talk you. This could be at the gambler's table where they tell you, don't worry, I feel it. Now your luck is changing. You just lost every penny. I just heard last week, that a guy went to buy a property in Las Vegas. So on his way out of Las Vegas, he had to fill up on gas. So he goes into the gas station, and he starts talking to the attendant. And the attendant says, you know what a terrible place this Las Vegas is. Let me show you. He takes out from behind his counter a box. And inside the box, he has maybe 100 watches. So he asks him, what are these? So he said, these are from people who every few days, I have another person coming by here who's leaving Las Vegas, and he doesn't even have $10 to fill up gas. He doesn't have a penny left in his credit card, in his wallet, in anything. And all they have is they tell me, look, I need gas, I got to get home, I have no other way of getting home, so they leave me their watches. He says, every week or two I get another one like that. Not that every week or two there's another one who's like that, but every week or two there's another one like that who needs gas. Meaning there are people like that every day. So very often in the beginning it's all sweet. Yeah, I feel it, you're going to be rich. You know that in Las Vegas at the airport, they make the slot machines, they make them so that you win. They make it so that your odds of winning are much higher. Higher than in the casino. Oh, yeah, I don't know, I've never been to Las Vegas. They have in the airport because a lot of people get off the plane and they can't wait to get there. So they make it that before you get there, you feel like, oh, I'm lucky, I'm doing good. And then you got to go to the real place, right? That's what you came for. No one stays in the airport. And then you move on from there and then you lose. They clean you out. So many things in life are like that. The beginning is sweet, but Shlomo Melech says, where's it going to lead to? Kishacha el mavet beita, her home, so to speak, is a slide down to death. Ve'el refa'ima gilotein, her paths lead to the corpses. Kol ba'eha lo yeshuvun, people who enter by her, they don't turn back. It's very hard to peel away from that. Chazal tell us that there are all kinds of averos in life. But the avera of adultery is one that's very hard to turn back on. Promiscuity, adultery. Chazal say that's an avera which has a place on its own in this planet. And it's just hard. Shlomo HaMelech says to come back. People usually walk in and they don't come back. And here Chazal say this is a reference to other religions, which Rambam says is intertwined with promiscuity. The simple reading is it's always more convenient to have an easy life. And you'll find no religion probably that's harder than Judaism. Think about it. Other religions are more easygoing. Come on. What difference does it make? You know, like, you could do this, you could do that. Look around. See what's out there. When God speaks, He says, this is what I want to be. I want you, life is much harder, you know, and it's endless perfection. You've never finished working in Judaism. It's always easier to go the other route, and the other route is always going to be more permissive to do a lot more, and it's less demanding. I don't know every religion on the planet. I mean, you might tell me some religions make you walk on hot coals. I don't know, but I'm not saying every religion. But at the end of the day, there's something that's very grueling. It's very demanding to be a Jew. It's not the easy life. It's the good life. It's not the easy life. So Shlomo Mel says, most people, once they enter that path, once they start walking down a different path, they don't want to turn back. But the Rambam says that most people end up walking off because they're interested in promiscuity. The mitzvah that the Gemara also says, the mitzvah that's hardest for people to swallow is the mitzvah. And our parasha, the Jews complained about it. Already in the desert, the Jews were complaining. We can't have as many women as we could have had back in Egypt. They weren't limited to one wife at that time, but they were limited. They couldn't marry their aunts. They couldn't marry their grandmother and great-grandmother. I'm not sure that's the woman they were thinking about, but whatever it is. Yeah.
They
complained about that? And our parsha, yeah. When they were complaining about fish, our tradition is they weren't talking about fish. They were talking about other things that were easier to gather. Back in Egypt. And then Egypt was a place that was rampant in promiscuity. No one knew who their fathers were. I mean, that's a tradition we have. That's what it says in the Prophet. Zilmatsusim zilmatam. They're like horses, they're maleness. They're running around all the time. So the Jewish people had it easier in Egypt, and they complained about it. This is the one mitzvah that people, the Rambam says, this is what usually drives people to be irreligious, less religious, other religions. Hey, other mitzvahs are easier to swallow. You tell a guy to keep Shabbos, it's hard, but okay, Shabbos, we can swallow. You start keeping Shabbos, you see the joys of Shabbos, okay, you want to keep Shabbos. You tell a person he has to daven, it's nice, you have a connection with the community, you have a connection with God. Hey, other mitzvahs are easier. You tell a person that he has to be faithful to one wife, he has to be moral, he has times that he's permitted with his wife, prohibited. There it's much harder. Those are mitzvot that are much harder for a person. So the simple reading here is that we're talking about promiscuity. The deeper meaning is that we're talking about other religions. Yes?
You said the breed that were given that was given to woman was the breed of not being adulterous.
Correct.
So, where you get that from? From the Parashat of Sotah?
Different places. It's a concept that shows up in many places in the Navi. The Navi speaks often about the brit, so to speak, the covenant that a woman makes with her husband in marriage. The Navi often calls that her brit, her covenant.
So that's why you say mekudeshet. It's like mekudeshet from the language, from Russian kedusha, that what's me of mekudeshet?
Mekudeshet is set aside, so to speak.
Right, to him, right?
Right. So, but that's the concept of the brit, the covenant that's between a couple, that they're going to be faithful to one another. Yeah. Yeah.
This is one of these points. I was confronted with this past week, and the question of Sota, why is it that the woman is singled out? And people will tell you, and that was the question that I was asked, that reality is that really the one who isn't faithful is usually the husband.
Okay, it's a good question, but not for now. We're in the middle of Mishnah. A little bit later. Shlomo HaMelech says, "Kol ba'eh lo yishuvun." All who come to her don't turn back. V'lo yasigu ochot chayim, and they don't end up finding the path of life because it's very hard to turn back. And Chazal tell us that a person who's been accustomed to other religions or to other ways of life, it's very hard to turn back, and that's why it's uncommon that people do. For everyone that does, you have another 100 or 1,000 who do not. Shlomo isn't saying it's impossible, he's just saying it's not probable and it's not easy. Liman. So again, Shlomo's telling you, I'll keep you away from that. I'll keep you out of the doors. I'll keep you away, because once you enter, it's hard to come back out. Liman. Telech. The wisdom will teach you how to go in the path of good, the path that good people go on. And you'll maintain a path in life that is the path of the righteous. That's one of the purposes of the Torah, to keep us on path. And it's interesting that I've met many people who thought they could do this without the Torah. And we've discussed in the past that the Torah is here to really hone our skills at being good people. You could be a decent person without Torah. It's true, you could. The Torah is going to help you perfect it. The Torah is going to teach you many areas where they're really gray areas, and you're going to have to really have a hard... It's going to be very hard for you to decide what's morally right. And if you look at the Torah, so God says, here, I'll tell you. There's an answer. But we also find that in the bind, it's very, very hard to live up to the trials of life if you don't have a system that's given by God. Because at the end of the day, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and when push comes to shove, when things reach a certain point, depends on the person where that point is going to be, well then, we have a term in halacha, we also say, chayecha kodmin, your life comes before other people's life. Meaning we don't tell you to forego your own life so that someone else lives. You're not allowed to take someone else's life to keep your own life. But at the same time, we don't tell you, you know, he's standing in a burning building, and if you walk in, you're going to for sure die. But maybe you'll save him. You know, we don't tell you give up your life certainly to save his. Someone's standing there, he's aiming the gun at whoever it is, at Kennedy, and you could jump in the way and catch the bullet. We don't tell you to jump in the way. Why should you lose your life to save his? We're not telling you to shoot him to save yours, but we're also not telling you to jump and save his bullet. We do have this concept of chayecha kodmin, but we have it in specific places. And in many instances, when people are faced with the challenge, like we had a year ago, we had a guy from Machon Meir who was in a specific position, and he was being blamed for something in his job that he didn't do. And he was faced with a dilemma. If he went to the boss and said, you know, I didn't do this, then the person who did do it would be fired. If he remained silent, he was risking himself getting fired. And that was his dilemma. So it required a lot of analysis, and what we tried to do is to get the guy who was responsible to come forward and take the responsibility for what he had done. He claimed he would do it, and he never did. And the guy from Machon Meir did something very nice, that really, in his case, that was the halacha. He remained silent. He took the blame and risked losing his own job, and he was a person with a family. But in that case, halachically, in that case, look, there were many details. I'm not going into all the details of that case, but in that case, halachically, he could not have caused the other one to lose his job. The other one should have come forward and declared what had happened. But in that case, again, I'm not going into all the details, he was stuck in a situation where the halacha expected of him to remain silent. That story has a nice ending. He's still at the same position. They didn't fire him. Not only that, he got a better position because of it. They meant to demote him, but they put him in a position which for him was much better, and he's much happier. But you never know in life how it's going to work out. You know, we said a story earlier tonight that didn't have such a happy ending. Not every story has a happy ending. But when push comes to shove, life is very challenging because it's a dog-eat-dog world. And we often feel like it's either me or him. And the reason, I think, one of the reasons why the Torah is described as it will keep you on the path of good people is because the Torah really will. You know, and without it, it's very hard in these situations to maintain that path. When a person can go home at night and tell his wife, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year, but I know I'm doing what God wants of me, so then he could live with that decision. I'm doing what's right. I know, this is the Torah, this is what God wants of me, and so this is what I have to do here, and what the price will be, I don't know. If a guy has to come home and tell his wife, this is what's morally correct, so I'm doing it. So she's going to look at him and say, well, why isn't it morally correct to bump him off? Why do you have to be bumped off for his mistake? And why is it so morally correct for you to risk your children, you don't know where you're going to feed them from next year? Why is that so morally correct? It gets very tough. It gets very, very tough. So Shlomo tells us, you want to stick to the path of the good. You want to stick to the path of the just. The Torah is the way to do it.